1180 WHAS proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbite. Call the show at 222-1180, *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAS.
February Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use.
Stuff you can use.
Things you can lose. Stuff to confuse. We'll start with a news item. A computer hacker didn't actually shut down the internet at RIT on Wednesday, and the school thinks the hacker lives halfway around the world. The breach was bad enough to shut the school's website down for 90 minutes on Wednesday morning. RIT officials believe the hacker was from Indonesia and was out to create chaos, not steal information. Emilio DiLorenzo, with the Information and Technology Services at RIT, said it definitely is frustrating because they're always a step or two ahead of us. Ahead of everybody, really. It's up to DiLorenzo to figure out how the breach happened. He's a kind of an army of one. I know the people who work for him. I'm sure they're thrilled to hear that. Trying to fend off thousands of hackers a day. He monitors a screen that shows the internet activity at the school and indicates when someone tries to get into our IT system. DiLorenzo used that screen to find out where the hacker got in. They just keep getting smarter. They have more time than we do, DiLorenzo said. It's frustrating because it's a constant battle. The battle starts at RIT's computer networking class. It's where students learn how computer systems work and how they can stop hackers in the future. Students are curious. They want to know what's going on. It may be their first one to live through, RIT professor Charlie Border said. RIT officials said the situation was serious, but not an emergency. The school said it had high bandwidth technology, and that's why it's a high target for hackers. You have to absolutely be on guard 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, DiLorenzo said. It's against the law to do what this hacker did, but Emilio DiLorenzo said the chances of this person getting caught and arrested is slim. RIT said no one who was using the school's website when it was shut down is in danger of having their personal information stolen. I personally missed the entire thing. I was in a four-hour meeting on Wednesday morning.
Oops.
By the time I was done, I was so brain dead I could barely find the elevator. Yeah, exactly. So I missed the whole hoopla.
Is this related to any of the other schools? Because it wasn't there like half a dozen schools?
Yeah, there were half a dozen schools this happened to, and we're just one of them. Basically, they rerouted us through a server somewhere in Asia, I believe in India, and I believe it went through wherever those four cables were broken.
That were cut, by some ship in their anchor. Yeah.
And so things were absolutely slow and for about an hour and a half simply shut down, but our guys at RIT, and I'm sure at the other schools as well, God bless them, they're brilliant. They did everything they could as fast as they could to get everybody back online, and I personally commend them for that. They were exceptionally good at what they did, and they did it fast and well. So kudos to all of you guys, because you were terrific. All right. Our first caller is Walt from Leroy, New York. Welcome, Walt. What's your question?
Oh, good morning, guys. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. Good to be heard.
Oh, yeah. Well, gee, I got a little problem, and it's really frustrating because it's a simple thing, but it's really very important. I'm running TurboTax. I just got my new edition.
Oh, you don't have people? I hate that commercial. I want to pick up the box and beat the woman. Sorry.
Because the other program is Intuit TurboTax and H&R Tax Cut, isn't it? And they both have people you can call.
They all have people.
Yeah, but it's still just the woman, the way she sits there. Oh, we don't have people. We got the box. I'd pick up the box and throw it at her and tell her to do it.
Well, no, see, that's just indicative. No matter what a husband does, he's always wrong in the eyes of his wife.
Right. All right, back to you now, Walt.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, a short rant.
It's a very simple problem, and I'm a little frustrated that I can't solve this because it seems like it's such a simple thing. I'm pretty competent on the computer, but this has got me stumped. I just put my new TurboTax in, and I keep getting this message that says this computer's internet connection appears to be offline. Now, I'm online. I'm on dial-up, but everything works fine. I do the usual things. All the other programs seem to work. I try couple of different browsers. They work fine. I do the usual things. I take a look at the firewall and I disconnect everything or you know, shut down all the security features, turn all of those off, do all of those kinds of things. And still, I can't seem to get through. Now, I went to the TurboTax website and looked through their problem-solving area. And for the PC side, there seems to be quite a lot of information written. But I'm running an Emac right now, the 10.4.8 version of OX 10, and I can't seem to get past this. So, I don't know. You guys got any ideas?
Now, all right, you're using a Mac, and you say you're dialing in?
I'm dialing in through dial-up. Now, I've done this for like the last 3 or 4 years, never had a problem at all.
What system version are you running?
OX 10.4.8.
Yeah, because we've been hearing that's a huge problem with the new TurboTax 2007 requires system 10.4, and a lot of people who don't have have older computers can't run it now without upgrading.
Right, then mine still should be okay then, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Now, I wonder...
Well, I can pursue this further. I looked for Mac stuff on the website there at TurboTax, and there is some more stuff, but it's not as, what would I say, as user-friendly as the Windows side. So I just thought I'd call you guys if you had any suggestions.
Well, TurboTax and TaxCut are the two basic tax programs available for Mac and Windows. You said you're running 10.4.8?
Yes.
You missed the 10.4.9, 10, and 11 patches. That may fix some of the issues.
Okay.
It may be that TurboTax is expecting a broadband connection,
right?
And it's you have to dial into the internet first, make sure you're connected to the internet, and then launch TurboTax, and maybe that's what it's waiting to see.
Okay, I'll try that.
Because there was also a R2 patch that came out recently as well for TurboTax itself.
Okay, well, I'll give that a try and see what happens.
There you go.
Okay, and worst case scenario, they do have a free CD that I can get with all the tax forms on it.
That's what it wants the internet connection for, is to download the latest versions of each of the tax forms for each of the different states, any new regulations that have been enacted since the disk was pressed.
Okay,
so they want you to have an internet connection for all that.
How much RAM do you have in this mini?
768 megabytes.
Okay.
No, the system requirements, I checked that before I installed it. So.
Yeah. Right.
Well, the mini likes to have matched pairs of memory, so 768 is an unmatched pair.
Okay,
may affect your video performance, but it shouldn't affect the rest of the computer as much.
Connection and all that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me work on it, and I'll let you guys know.
Let us know.
Find out.
Okay.
Real good. Okay, thank you, guys. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Much.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, a lot of programs now expect to see a continuous broadband internet connection for checking for updates and checking for patches. And, you know, the days of dial-up are getting to be almost numbered. Although, interesting corollary, so many people have switched to broadband as dial-up is getting faster. Because there's fewer people using it.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I just backed up my documents to DVD-RW, and when I tried to open up the DVD, nothing. I got a blank screen.
Did you finish the session?
Yeah.
What program did you use to burn the files?
Nero Smart Essentials.
Should have worked.
Yeah.
And I click on it, and...
Does your optical drive accept RW disks?
How would I know that? I have no idea.
That would be the documentation.
It'd be in the specifications.
Well, it would say it'd give them an error if it didn't burn it.
It completely burned it because I ended up finishing it.
What are you using to try to restore it?
I clicked on my computer and the drive came up and I clicked on that and then there's nothing.
Have you tried that disk in another computer?
No, I haven't.
That's something to try. It may be. Well, see, usually finishing the session fixes that. Until you finish the session, it only works on that one computer with that one burning software.
Explain how you did all this backup.
I opened up the Nero Smart Start, and I dragged all my documents onto it.
Yeah.
And then I just clicked next, and it said burning was complete after about 25, 26 minutes. And then it said finish. And I opened up the DVD drive, closed it, and I wanted to check it, and nothing's happening.
Yeah, so you shouldn't even have to close it if you're using the Burn Smart. I would try burning another DVD.
Okay.
Just to see. You might have a bad drive.
Wow, it's fairly new.
But that doesn't matter. Drives, you know, they sell a billion of them, and if 1/100 of 1% are bad out of the box, you still got an awful lot of bad drives.
And it's sometimes the media, too. Some brands of drives don't like some brands of media, and it's a hit or miss until you find out one that your drive likes.
Yeah. What I was using, I was using the Sony DVD Plus Rs, and this is a RW. It's a minus RW.
Right. The plus and minus are two completely different formats. R and RW are two additional completely different formats. So it depends on what the physical capabilities of your drive are.
Well, yeah. I burned successfully before the Sony DVD Plus Rs. I'm going to do that now and see.
May be that your system simply can't take the minus RWs.
Right. Yeah. Is there a verify function in the burning software? After it burns, it will verify that it burned it right. That takes longer, and then most people skip that, but you may want to let that run.
Okay.
Let us know, though.
I'm going to burn another one right now.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, we are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 18 minutes after the hour. When we come back, don't forget, we're going to take a lot more of your phone calls. Stay tuned, of course, the most important part of the show, Uncle Dave's Story Hour, will be up in just a little while. So give us a call. You know the numbers, 222-1180 in the 585 area code, 800-295-1180. That's a free call on the One Communications line. And, of course, if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's *1180, and that'll get you right through the magnificent Jessica is waiting eagerly for you. She's staring at the phone and panting heavily now. Would somebody please call in? The poor woman is waiting.
She's going to get an anxiety attack.
You sure she's not already on the phone?
we've already got a bunch of lines filled. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites. We're just ignoring Steve entirely on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. I hope somebody's watching the studio cam. Not the studio cam, but the control room cam. Jessica has this very nifty gesture. Both fingers come up, she points overhead at me when it's my turn to talk.
Well, it's because there's some. The monitors are so tall in there, she has trouble seeing over them.
Pretty much, Jessica is a forehead and a hairband to us right now. That's pretty much what we're seeing there. Because the monitors are just so high, that's all there is to it.
And she's standing on her tippy toes.
I just got an eyebrow. All right, there we go.
She is a sweetie.
She is. All right.
I found a couple of notes for our TurboTax caller earlier. Make sure you're in an administrator account. That was a tech note. From TurboTax, the Windows screen came up, but
The thing you're never supposed to do, you have to do it now.
Yeah, make sure you're an administrator. And I just launched my copy of TurboTax to see if, because there's an internet connection setup screen inside of TurboTax where you tell it what your connection is, and 5 updates wanted to install. So there's a lot of updates for TurboTax already.
You're right. And if you're a dial-up user, that's going to take your day.
Yeah, in fact, we're on broadband here, and it's still installing.
Yeah, right. All right, Apple's iPhone is the most in-demand and the most satisfying phone to own, according to new research from Apple. No, new research from a company called ChangeWave. We don't know who paid for that research, but new research from ChangeWave claims record numbers of consumers are abandoning basic phones for more advanced models, with Apple's iPhone and Research in Motion's BlackBerry leading the trend. A January survey of 4,182 consumers focused on key market share changes among manufacturers and service providers, and the results caused the researchers to note a seismic shift in the industry. Among respondents who said they plan to buy a new phone in the next 6 months, the Apple iPhone with 17% of votes remains the top choice. 72% of those surveyed already own an iPhone said they were very satisfied with the device. Apple's main competitor seems to be the Research in Motion BlackBerry, the second favorite choice among those planning to buy a new phone at 15%, and 55% of RIM users were very satisfied. Motorola, with 11% of the future purchase market, continues a horrendous slide. It began immediately after Steve Jobs announced the iPhone. Palm, which has 30%, ranks at the very bottom in terms of customer satisfaction, while Motorola at 34%, Sony at 34%, Samsung at 34% are all tied in next to last place. Just 23% of respondents plan to buy a new mobile phone in the next 6 months, according to the research. One of the things that I have to say about the Research in Motion BlackBerry is that it is much better for use in a corporate environment. In a corporate environment, you are much more likely to have sensitive data on your BlackBerry. And if you lose it, you call your administrator. They set up a BES server, the BlackBerry Enterprise server, whatever it's called, the BES server. And they can set a flag in there. The next time that BlackBerry is turned on, it's wiped out automatically. So nobody can steal your stuff.
a better interaction with the Exchange email server as well.
Right, yeah. Right. But so it's for me, just that one thing, just that one fact that it is that secure. Now, that's not 100% accurate either, because you can get around it if you know what you're doing. But
speaking of Blackberries, I just heard something on Steve Gibson's Security Now podcast that the Opera Lite web browser has a secure option into it.
Yep.
But that takes you to Opera's internal servers where they cache information and then send it unsecure the rest of the way to your destination.
Yeah.
So don't use Opera on a BlackBerry if you want a secure connection.
And the problem is, if you run a BlackBerry, at some point it goes through RIM's servers in Canada, wherever they are. And
Toronto, I think.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that the government is aware of that, that all their people who are using BlackBerries to communicate, all the information is going through Canada.
Remember when the big patent lawsuit was threatened to shut down RIM and millions of government workers said, no, please.
Right. But now, currently, all of our data goes through servers in Canada. All you have to do is corrupt those servers. Well, anyway, that's
not well, on better news, Apple introduced greater capacity iPhones and iPod Touches now. So you can get a 32 gig iPod Touch. So greater capacity.
Going to get it with flash?
It is flash memory.
Excellent. That's what I meant.
Well, the flash player, that's still one of the annoying things. The QuickTime player for the iPod and iPhone is out, so you can watch QuickTime movies in your mobile device. But Adobe hasn't got the flash player written yet, and that seems rather odd.
There. Adobe's probably... Anyway, we'll talk a little later about the G Phone and how exciting that's going to be. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. I've got a question in regards to SpyBot. I see that there's a new version of SpyBot 1.5. Currently have the one that I've been running for a good year, 1.4, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And what do you guys think of 1.5? Has anybody tried it out yet? And
it's been out for quite a while.
Oh, it has. Okay, I just became aware of it.
And it's very good. You definitely want to upgrade. There's also a new version of AdAware out, 2007.
I'm aware of that, Now, if I download 1.5 SpyBot, will that override my current SpyBot program, or should I uninstall the first one?
It'll override.
It asks you if you have to uninstall it first, doesn't it? AdAware does. It asks you if you want to remove the previous version first.
This will just say that there is a version you want to update, and you just say yes.
Yep.
Okay. And the other thing, I actually danced the tango last weekend in safe mode.
Good for you.
When I tried to get to the AdAware program, I couldn't open AdAware.
AdAware 2007 does not like safe mode.
So what do I do?
Run it in regular mode.
I did.
Yeah.
But I was just surprised that I couldn't open it up in safe mode.
We're seeing more programs like that. Norton Antivirus, you can't run in safe mode, which is when you want to run it.
Well, it's stupid to not run it in safe mode. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
Okay, you've answered my question, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Dan.
There must be some...
I only report what I know.
Yeah, there must be some reason for it, but
I can't imagine what that reason would be.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Brad from Churchville, New York. Welcome, Brad. What's your question?
Hi, I just had the information for the gentleman that had the trouble with TurboTax.
Oh, excellent. See, this is my favorite part of the show.
Yep.
Walt, I hope you're still listening out there in Leroy. Go
what
ahead,
do you
Brad.
Mean, do you think he's definitely listening?
Yeah, he's definitely listening. Who wouldn't be listening? Go ahead, Brad.
Brad's calling in for him.
Well, I had the same Apple program with the problem. I have the new Mac Leopard, and it was basically I just had to do manual download. In the instructions, there's a, like when you do in the help search at the top, there's a, you just type in manual download, and there's a link to it.
Ah, so under help, it's help in TurboTax.
Yes.
Yeah, type manual download, hit enter, and it'll bring you back to the link, and it'll tell you how to do all that.
I think so.
Excellent.
Right, so you get the patch that then makes it work with the internet you have.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Cool.
I still had to, I sent for the CD, the free CD to update. Because I still had a problem with downloading the state for some reason, but it should come soon.
It'll get there.
But it got to you and you're all good now.
Yeah, I was able to do the federal fine.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you very much, Brad.
Thanks for information. Help.
Yep. Have fun. That's bye-bye. See, this remains my favorite
part
of this show.
Other folks that have experience and they're sharing their knowledge.
None of us is as smart as all of us, as they say. All right. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
I have a question about networking two computers together.
Right.
Both are running XP. One's running Professional Service Pack 2. The other one's running Home Service Pack 2.
Mm-hmm.
Every time the laptop will see the desktop.
Well, wait. Are you talking Pro? Give us Pro or Home. Don't tell us laptop, desktop.
Okay. XP Home.
Right.
Is not seeing the XP Professional.
But Pro can see home.
Yes.
Do they both have the same work group, name?
Yeah, work
group. Yes.
You're doing this through a router hub?
Yes.
And you're doing DHCP?
Yes.
One of the things you can check is open up a command line and ping the other computer. Okay. That will let you know if the networking architecture is working, and then you'll know that it's a Windows problem, not a networking problem.
And both of them can get out to the network or
the internet?
Let me say this. In safe mode, they both see each other.
Okay.
Then it's got to be a security thing. Yeah,
probably firewall. The pro's firewall.
It does keep telling me that the contact your system administrator because you don't have...
Did you turn off the firewall on both of them?
That could be
Something to check is to turn off the firewall temporarily.
Well, no, he doesn't need it. If he's got a Linksys router hub, he's got a built-in firewall.
Well, yeah, that's the incoming firewall. It's still nice to have an outgoing firewall
on
the computer.
I go with zone alarm. That's right. Better than...
But at the very least, for a moment at least, turn off your firewall.
Okay.
And see if that fixes the problem. If it does, then you know that the problem is the XP firewall. We're not big fans of the XP firewall to begin with.
Okay.
We recommend Zone Alarm, which has a free version.
Right.
Well, then even in Zone Alarm, you have to make your local network a trusted zone.
Right, but it's easy. It's
another good one that'll do it automatically is Commando.
Okay.
PC World put that one up, and I've tried that on a number of computers. It seems to be a little smarter in setting up the network. It does the same thing. It'll ask you, do you want to trust this program? It learns as you go along, but it's just as good.
Okay.
In fact, PC World gave it, I think, what was it, 4 out of 5 stars?
Very nice.
All right, I will try that. Thank you very
much. And it's free.
Thank you very much. See, free is always good.
Yeah.
I much prefer free.
Must have free.
Our next caller is Shirley in Webster, New York. Welcome, Shirley. What's your question?
On my desktop, I've got Windows 98. On my laptop, I've got XP.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a router set up so that when I'm on the laptop in the other part of the house, I can still get the same Roadrunner speed.
Yeah.
All right. I'm trying to download Adaware 2007 on the laptop, and I can't do it.
For Windows 98?
No, for Windows XP on the laptop.
What happens when you try?
It says it's download, and then I go to get into it, and there's nothing.
You double-click on the program to install it?
Yeah.
And it doesn't install?
No. I'm wondering if it's because I have Windows 98 on the desktop and XP on the laptop.
No, that shouldn't matter. If you're trying to install it on the laptop, it doesn't care about the desktop.
It will not run under the new 2007 version. It will not run under 98.
But it will run on XP.
So do you get an error message when you double click on it?
No, it just says that it doesn't notice that it's downloaded to. And I turned off the firewall on the laptop and still
didn't. You're trying to install it on the laptop, on the XP machine.
Yes.
And you downloaded it on the XP machine.
Uh-huh.
And you double click on it and I don't know what the error message is.
And you're sure the download finished? Because it may
it
take
said
a
it was finished.
Okay.
But it doesn't show anything going across like a regular download. It just hasn't done it.
When you try to download it, you've already downloaded it once, right? You've got a copy there on your desktop or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
Try deleting that first.
Yeah, and re-download it.
And then re-download it clean. What may be happening is that your browser is saying, oh, it's already there. I don't have to download it.
On the desktop.
Yeah.
Right.
But...
Well, not the desktop computer, the desktop of your laptop.
Yeah, man, wherever you put it on your laptop.
Wherever you download your files to on your laptop.
Yeah.
Delete the file that download, the Adaware download, and then try downloading it again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that there's not already a version on there.
Hmm.
See, that may have been a bad download. Then when you try to re-download it, it says, no, it's already there.
File's already there.
Hmm. I thought, well, maybe I'll have to go to dial-up and do it just directly to the laptop.
No, you should be able to do it through, you're getting connected to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to go to that website, click on the download, and
right from the laptop.
Yep.
Okay, I'll try it again.
All right, let us know.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you very much. That does get confusing when you use the word desktop for two different things, and when she's on the laptop but she's downloading it on
the desktop of the laptop, not the desktop of the desktop.
Right, exactly. Exactly. All right.
We got you totally confused.
Yeah.
Because we're certainly confused. We don't need to get, we don't care about you. We're confused. That's so easy for us. Who are we and what are we doing? And see how confused they get? We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, the long-suffering Jessica Sawyer, who I don't know why she bothers to put up with us, but we love her anyway. And I'm Nick Francesco. Don't forget, give us a call, 222-1180, 800-295-1180, star 1180 for a Verizon Wireless customer. And we will be back in just a couple of minutes at 38 minutes after the hour. It's the greatest computer show in the known universe. And, of course, that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Well, that was only one hand this time. I'm not going to do it. Not until I get both hands. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And if you're just joining in...
Yeah, you don't have any idea what's going on. It's 42 minutes after the hour.
They have to be here to appreciate it.
And we are Soundbites. Yeah, download the podcast and take a listen to the first few minutes. Last week, we mentioned that Microsoft had bid $44.6 billion. That's billion with a B for Yahoo. Now, that was an unsolicited bid. Yahoo didn't ask for it. Yahoo took some time to think about it. And now Yahoo's board has decided that Microsoft's $31 per share offer massively undervalues the company. Yahoo is expected to formally reject Microsoft's offer. It originally appeared Yahoo was floating the idea that it might consider an offer of at least $40 a share. All of this, the information leak, the wording, all of that sounds more like a negotiating tactic than a final rejection, actually. But if Yahoo does want to play hardball, it has bolstered its position. Yahoo has also adopted a so-called poison pill that means that the internet company could force Microsoft into a proxy fight to replace the board before getting Yahoo shareholders to vote on its existing offer. Yahoo will outline its position in a letter to Microsoft's board on Monday. So Microsoft's bid to Yahoo has been, at least for the moment, summarily rejected.
$44 billion is undervalued?
Yes.
Holy cow.
Yes.
What do they think of themselves?
Well, and they're right.
Quite a bit.
You know,
money, money.
Yeah.
You know, if they're making that in a year,
yeah,
or even two or three, that's undervalued. Yeah.
Probably
well, if
less
well, their stock is selling at 31 and Microsoft is offering 40, isn't that overvalued?
No, Microsoft is offering 31.
Oh, it was the other way around?
Yeah. They want 40.
Well, then they're idiots.
Well, somebody is, certainly. That's absolutely true. All right, we're going back to the phones now. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Dave asked me to call back after I reburned a CD, and it turns out that when I use the Sony DVD Plus Rs, it burned, no problem. So right now I've got 24 DVD RWs that I can't use.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we solved your problem, but I'm sorry you're stuck with a bunch of RWs.
Well, and that's the different issue, too. The plus R minus R, plus RW minus RW, plus RDL minus RDL.
And if you're not confused, stay tuned, you'll get worse.
They're all mutually incompatible formats.
Right.
You have to know what specifications your drive has.
The good news is you know that when you use plus R's, you're good.
Well, the thing
plus R versus plus RW are two different formats yet.
Or what he can do to even get around all of this is just add another drive. Excuse me.
That does
for $45, you can get another drive that'll do all the formats.
Oh, what web brand is that?
Stop by my shop.
Any of them.
Yeah, I got them.
Most any of them, yeah.
Yeah, most any of them. I mean,
any of the newest ones.
Yeah.
Any of the newer ones.
Light On is probably one of the biggest drives that you use.
Light On is the biggest, and like I say, you can add another one, and it'll do all the formats, even double layer.
Oh. Okay.
Well, now, I looked into that earlier. Double layer and dual layer are completely different incompatible formats.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yep. Beautiful thing about standards, there are so many of them.
Right. Yeah, one is plus RDL, one is minus RDL. They're incompatible formats, but most drives do both.
Yeah, so check around. You can find them all over, Victor.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Yep,
and thank you for calling back. I appreciate that.
Now, on the Mac, it's relatively easy to figure out what capabilities you have. If you go into your system profiler in the utilities menu, there's a burning section that tells you what format. So I can see on my computer, I can do minus R minus RW and DVD minus R and DVD minus RW. So then I know what kind of discs to buy.
Very nice.
if you look at the specifications that came with your computer, it should tell you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, theoretically it should, yeah.
If you still have those.
And here's a tip for all of those of you who are going out to buy computers in the near future. Make sure you're told that. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. A lot of the PC towers that we see will come with a CD reader in one bay and then the DVD reader writer in the other bay. The standalone, say, CD writer is a faster burn than the CD writing in a DVD writer.
All
right.
All I can say?
Yeah. Uh-oh, yeah. Here we go.
Well, now we've got the Blu-ray and HD DVD as the next incompatible format, but it looks like Blu-ray is going to win now.
Yeah, it does now.
Yeah.
I don't know which is better. Probably HD DVD.
Well, it depends on how you define better. Well, HD DVD is cheaper. Blu-ray is greater capacity, which means better quality video and better interaction for DVD interactive movies.
No, it just means they'll put the same quality video and just put more stuff.
Yeah, more extra stuff.
Yep. Right.
The better one is the one that works with your system.
That's true. That is very true.
And that's the whole mess has come up with where consumers aren't buying either until the formats are settled on. So right. It's almost become the game console you buy. You buy a PS3, it has a Blu-ray in it, and all the Sony-backed movies, Sony and Disney and Warner was the last big one to switch over. If you get an Xbox 360, there's an HD option, and now you've got Paramount and Universal as the only studios backing HD DVD.
Right.
So if you like Disney movies, you go with Blu-ray. If you like, you know, the Matrix-type action movies from Universal, you go with HD DVD.
Or you spend a whole lot more money and
get
buy
a yeah. You get both.
One plays both. Yeah. All right. We are, I'm very excited. We're going to take a break. If you're on the line, stay on the line because Uncle Dave's Story Hour is coming off. And that means take a good hold on the phone if you're listening over the phone. If you're not on the line, I have no idea why not, because we're all having fun here. It's what?
I'm easy to go up. You know, very calm.
Yeah, that's you. Yeah, it's Uncle Dave that we have a problem with.
Oh, give us a call. You didn't say that?
Yeah, give us a call at 222-1180, 800-295-1180, or *1180 for all you Verizon wireless subscribers. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco. It is 48 minutes after the hour, and you are still listening, and I'm not sure why, to the greatest computer show in the known universe. We'll be back on the other side of these little advertisements with sound bites. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, it's sound bites. All right, you know what that song means, everybody. All right, kiddies, go get your footy jammies on. Grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. If we can slap them awake, it's time once again for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Yeah, I'm here.
Uh-oh.
And, oh, you ready?
Strap yourself in, kids.
Hey, I never promised an easy ride.
Yeah.
Okay, zip heads. I know, you know, some of the major stores have, especially the one that was left selling computers, has bailed town. And you folks come and say, you know, want to get these great deals. Well, you know, me, along with Steve and a lot of other folks around here in the Rochester area, try to build a very good product for the consumers. So when you go out there and, you know, ask us to do up a quote and, you know, get the information for you and then come back and say, well, I found it cheaper on the internet. And I turn around and tell you, good luck. Don't get offended. Especially when you come back and ask me a question on how to fix that piece of that you got because you got the great deal. Because you don't want to spend... Nick tells a story from way back when, I mean, when we first started Soundbites, of a client that came in and wanted to buy a machine, but could save $5, went down the street, and then came
literally
back to
five
him.
$5.
Literally came back to him and wanted to ask all these questions. Well, you know what? I'm not going to answer them. You can go online and talk to that 800 number and put up with the 3 hours, because that's what you get when you buy locally. We're here. We support what we do. Whether it's me, Steve, or any of the other folks here in Rochester, we're going to back what we sell. So if you go and buy something on the internet, don't bitch at us because you got to be on the phone for 2 and 3 hours and they're not solving your problem. That's what you paid for. That's what you get.
Yeah. For those of you who have not heard this story, and there must be at least one of you out there, so I'm going to tell it anyway. This guy comes in for days. He comes into the store and tries to dicker me down to, you know, a lower price. Finally comes in and says, I can buy it for $5 cheaper down the road. I said, you know what? Go, because you are such a massive pain in my patoot that I actually don't want you as a customer. You go buy it for $5 down the road. He then comes back the next day, starts asking me all these questions. I said, wait, you don't even own a computer. He said, oh, yeah, I bought it at the other place. I said, then go ask them the questions. He said, well, they don't know anything. And I said, well, that's clearly not worth $5 freaking to you, so screw it. Go well, disappear. Then he says, well, I'll pay you. I said, look, you would have to return the machine to them and buy mine. And you know what? If you're going to buy it from me, you're going to pay list price because I'm not giving you a nickel off it because you're such a massive pain in my patoot. And he did.
Whoa!
And nice. He did. He returned it and then came. And then, of course, I answered every question he had. But if you're not my customer, why do I answer your questions? I answer them on the radio, I answer them on television, I answer them at Wegmans, I answer them at the movie theater, I answer them at the bagel place. Why the heck am I going to answer them in my shop for free?
Well, that's the thing. And they get porked off.
How the hell did I become Uncle Dave?
That's why you got out of computers. You got out of computer sales 20 years ago.
So I wouldn't have to be Uncle Dave. My blood pressure was normal up until this moment.
Steve, get the second emergency hypodermic.
But this is the thing. You know, they get all bent out of shape because you don't want... And they'll sit there and say, well, you answer the questions on the radio. Yeah, call the radio and see if you can get through and maybe we'll answer
it. This is how we earn a living. Right, we're our own worst enemies because we answer questions free everywhere else. They walk into the store and say, well, you'll answer them free here too, won't you? No. I once got stopped by a guy at a party. For like 15 minutes, he's asking me computer questions. Finally, I said, look, what do you do for a living? He said, I'm a doctor. I said, doc, I got this pain right. He says, call my office. I said, you too.
Yep.
Yeah. And he walked away, and about a half hour later, came back, and he actually apologized to me.
Well, who's that doctor?
He said, I hate when people do it to me, and I did it to you.
Who's that doctor friend you knew that's, you know, doctor, I have a pain here. Oh, my God, that sounds serious. You better call my office.
Yes. Make an appointment immediately Monday morning.
So, folks, you know, I mean, like I said.
Yes, you're going to find it cheaper on the internet. That's because there's no support there.
Right.
The support after the sale, support before the sale, that's worth something.
And the other thing that really porks me off is folks will sit there and, you know, they tell me what they want and I customize it to the way they say that they want the machine.
Right.
And then they say, well, I can get it so much cheaper over here.
Well, they line item detail it. The battery's $5 cheaper this place. This card's $10 cheaper the other place.
But what they don't do, though, is compare apples to apples. And that's the other thing that really rips me off. Because they're comparing apples to oranges.
Right.
Well, not apples to apples.
You use a certain quality of component because
that's
you want it to
can
last
offer
5 years.
Like on a desktop computer, right. I offer a 3-year warranty. That's 3 years on parts, 1 year on labor.
One of my favorite stories of Dave's is years ago, he went to PC Magazine and picked the editor's choice of motherboard, video card, everything. None of it worked together. Right. Individually, they're the best thing, but none of them work together.
Yep. I want to say that on our IRC chat line, Theosis has got it right. He says, I think the moral of the story is not to work in retail.
I love it.
And when you're shopping in retail, please be nice.
Just ask me.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well, see, it's like everyone should be forced to be a waiter for a year. They should
I've
be
been
forced
a waiter,
to be a clerk
and I can't
for
possibly
a year.
Be more polite to those people. They work hard. All right, this is it. We're going to get out the hypodermics for everybody.
I enjoy
we're
my
giving
job.
Every single one of us a shot, and we're putting Uncle Dave back into his chair, and this time we're strapping him down. Clean out your mugs, change out of your footy jammies, because we are done with Story Hour for Uncle Dave. And we're also done with this segment. It is time for us to go make way for the news, the weather, the sports, all the things you really listen to Wham for. We will be back on the other side with the polls and all the other good things that we do with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, who's doing just a phenomenal job today.
Yeah, but you painted Francesco. That image. All I see is head and eyes.
Eyes, eyebrows, and forehead and a hairband. 59 minutes after the hour, sound bites. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. It's sound bites. Now she's doing this thing like she's an old West cowgirl. Bang! Double shot. All right. We are back, and as you know, every week, if you're on the line, hang on the line, we will get to you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was, should Microsoft be allowed to buy Yahoo? 321 of you voted, tying for 129th on the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you.
Resoundingly, 35% of you said no. 33% of you said, who cares? We've got Google. 21% of you said yes. And an astonishing 34% of you said, wait, Google is still around? So we want to thank you. This week's poll is about the G phone. Google is preparing to shake up the mobile sector by unveiling the first G phone. The search giant, which is angling for a chunk of the potentially highly lucrative wireless advertising market, is expected to produce a prototype mobile handset this coming week at the Mobile World Congress show, which starts tomorrow. The move will intensify the battle between Google and its rival Microsoft. The two are currently sparring over Microsoft's audacious $44 billion bid for rival Yahoo. Microsoft launched its own operating system for mobile phones several years ago and has negotiated tie-ups with many of the major handset makers. Google revealed late last year that it had developed a new operating system for mobile phones, but refused to elaborate on the kind of handsets in which its system, called Android, would be encased. Industry analysts believe that the California group has been plotting with Dell over a handset that is customized to showcase the software. The computer group has dabbled in the mobile market before, and last year poached Ron Garica's for Motorola, the world's third largest mobile handset maker. The extent of Google's ambitions in mobile have been underlined by its participation in the multi-billion dollar Federal Communications Commission spectrum auction underway here in America. Bids have already passed $4 billion, or one-tenth of what Microsoft is willing to pay for Yahoo. The failure of 3G services on the mobile phones, lack of a web-friendly handset, have held back the market in mobile advertising. However, with phones becoming more sophisticated and mobile network speeds faster, mobile is now seen as the next battleground for advertisers. More than 20% of the UK mobile subscribers are expected to have access to the mobile internet at broadband speeds by the end of the year. Informer Telecoms and Media, an analyst, estimates the mobile advertising could be worth over $11 billion. That's again a B by 2011. Google believes that the possibilities of location-based search advertising opened up by the mobile internet are the recreation of the PC story. So our question is, would you buy a G phone, a phone with Google imprimatur on it, software and everything else? The choices are absolutely never, I'd have to see it first, I'd turn in my iPhone for one, it runs Linux right, and G what now? So far we have 95 votes, and G what now is leading with 43, followed by I'd have to see it first. So go to the Soundbites webpage. That's soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And vote. When you're done voting, you'll notice a little yellow box underneath it. I know that just clicking a button is not enough for you people. So you can click Give Us Your Opinion. That will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Thank you. And you can then enter your opinion while you're there. Check out my website. I do a newsletter. You can search the old newsletters for stuff. I have forums. And at a mere $15 a year, it's cheap at half the price. So do that and then come on back to our website and see what we carry out for our own website.
The headband was right on time.
The headband is always right on time. It's a terrific headband.
I don't mean to insult you. It's since he painted that image in my forehead, I'd like to see this.
It's all we can really see of her is her forehead and her hairband.
Now you're going to make her self-conscious.
No, yeah.
She's not going to start writing dirty words to us on her forehead. Morons.
Yeah. Remember to do it in reverse image.
Right. Yeah. Shut up and work.
Should mention the FCC auction, after 51 rounds of bidding, now stands at $19 billion and 214 qualified bidders are bidding.
Yeah.
$19 billion so far for 1,000 licenses.
I'm really hoping that Google gets it all.
I lost interest at $12
billion. Yeah. Yeah, once it's $12 billion, who cares? All right, we have plenty of time to get to the phones. Our next caller is David from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, David. What's your question?
My question is a program entitled Winferno, which is a registry power cleaner, has appeared on my computer without my downloading it. And I'm wondering whether it's a virus or
I'd almost have to say yes.
It's a spyware program. Yeah, they put it down there and then all of a sudden they say, oh, your machine is infected. To get rid of this, go to our website and pay for $29.95 to get our product and we'll clean it out. They're the ones that put it there.
Well, it looks like the Winferno software company sells or claims to sell your regular McAfee and antivirus stuff, and It's a really well-written website, except, well, the copyright's 2007. So there may be a legitimate company behind the Winferno name.
And, of course, their timestamp seems to be February 10th, 108.
Some of the scams are getting...
out of nowhere without you downloading it,
yes.
I would be very, very, very leery and simply mm-hmm. throw it away.
Yeah, some of the scams are getting much more...
very creative.
Creative, and they look really good.
Oh, they do.
Now,
they
is it possible somebody else downloaded for you?
No.
Then if it appeared without you downloading it, get rid of it.
Yep. All
right. Don't install it. Don't run it. I would certainly dance the security tango to make sure it's gone, but I wouldn't run it if I were you.
Here's a review from PC Magazine.
Well, just because it's so called Winferno
doesn't
mean
it's
Winferno.
Yeah, that could have been hijacked, like you said.
There may be a legitimate
108
program with that
for
name.
A year.
In fact, I've got to go take a look at my mother's computer after the show. She a second username magically appeared on her computer.
How exciting!
Yeah.
But definitely get rid of it, dance the tango, see what happens.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Bye now.
Our next caller is Richard from Rushville, New York. Welcome, Richard. What's your question?
Okay, guys, be kind.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Thank Jessica. How she puts up with you guys, I don't know. But today, there's a classic recording.
We love Jessica. Uh-oh. She's coming over here to do something rude in the window.
Classic recording. Listen, I'm running a desktop. It was given to me by my cousin. It's got ME.
I knew you were going to say, I knew when you said be kind you were going to be running ME. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, I blame your cousin.
Well, you said you be kind. Doesn't mean I am to be. No way, Jose. You get what you deserve.
We're done with the Uncle Dave segment. Uncle Dave, get out the Miski. It's not just tranquilizers now. Get out the sledgehammer.
Ubuntu.com.
Okay, I have two questions, actually. One is because Attaware, I don't think, supports ME anymore.
No.
I found that just recently. Because I've been using
almost
Spybot.
Nothing supports ME anymore.
Not even Microsoft.
Well, Spybot seems to be doing the job a little bit. I got AVG. It hasn't given me any problems.
AVG, I think, will continue to run.
Okay. But I'm not worried about viruses that much. It's the Trojans and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Because I'm building up. I do a lot of news here and there, and so I'm picking up everything everywhere.
Yeah.
The other thing is I ordered a Security Tango disk from Dave. And when it comes in, is it going to be able to tell me, as illiterate as I am, how to operate it? Because I tried to download it, print it out.
Here's the thing. When you get our CD,
yeah,
it senses ME, it's going to blow your whole machine up.
No, no, it's not.
Third question was...
What the CD will do is once you put the CD in, you will get a whole menu. One by one, it'll allow you to install each of the products on that CD.
Okay.
And then after
then
you install...
Then it'll blow up your machine.
Well, did you get the script written yet so that it runs them themselves, or you still have to follow
script? No, we're working on that.
Yeah, you still have to follow the script from securitytango.com, but the CD gives you all the programs already, so you don't have to download them.
So I've got to print it out.
Yeah.
And then use the CD along with the printout.
You got it. I know.
Or,
I know you have to actually do something to keep your machine clean. I know.
Well, I don't have a printer.
that's a separate problem.
That's a hitch.
Well, like I say, you know, there's about a number of folks, and I just tell them, well, if you don't want to do it, bring it to us, and we do it. And usually a cleanup is like an hour, hour and a half, depending on how infected the machine is. I had one with 5,000 Trojans on it. Spyware.
Nice. And you would be able to do his machine because you take it out of the drive. Hook it up as a second drive, so even though it has ME on it, it would clean up.
You guys aren't going to ballpark a price for what that would run.
Yeah, about an hour, hour and a half.
An hour and a half?
Yeah.
That's what, $150 an hour?
No, $66 an hour.
Well, that's not bad. That's,
see?
Yes.
I try to be competitive. Like I say, you know, I'm not going to be as rich as Bill Gates, but, you know, I love...
Where'd you come up with that number?
Oh, man. I love your show.
Because they wouldn't let him do 66,
right?
No, I cannot take any credit for it. My wife. She is the accountant, and she likes it. Once you add tax and all that.
Yeah, right.
I don't even go there.
Right.
I just say,
I just saw a great t-shirt the other day. It said, 999, when I stand on my head, I'm evil.
Woo!
All right. Yes. Well, anyway,
6667 is the neighbor of the beast.
Question was, if do you have because Adaware is not going to support ME. Do you recommend another free download?
There really
is. Try Super Anti-Spyware. See if that'll
work.
That
runs on ME?
It might.
I'm checking
it out. It did, but boy, it seemed like it attacked a few other things that, you know, like it was wiping out my cookies for my...
You can uncheck that.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. That's what I did
download
was Super Spyware.
Yeah, Super Anti-Spyware.
Yeah, still supports 98, 98 SE, and ME.
Okay.
So try that, and like I say, if you don't want the cookies wiped, you know, you can just uncheck that.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you very much. We are going to take another break, and I think not a moment too soon. We just cannot get Dave's meds adjusted today. I don't know what the problem is, and I apologize to everybody, including the entire pharmaceutical industry. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Uncle Dave Enright, who's apparently just going to stay through the whole show, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who once again, by the way, has ably come in here and generously given of his time and his considerable talent to record the show to put it up on the website. We can't thank him enough for that. And, of course, Jessica Walker Sawyer of the headband.
We're going to make you famous for that, you know.
You're going to be more famous than all the rest of us put together. You could auction that headband off on eBay for like a buck, maybe two. It'll be great. And she's doing all the important work in the studio there.
Putting
in the booth.
Up with us.
I'm Nick Francesco. It is 18 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I am the headband. Thought you guys would like that.
You are
we love
sweetheart.
You, Jessica.
Wonderful.
At 22 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbite.
Although we might get in problems with their parents.
Yeah.
Referring to her as the headband.
What instrument do you play?
Yeah, right. In her head, it's the air guitar. In the headband, you have to play the air guitar.
There
you're
go.
Absolutely right.
All right. The website for Indian antivirus vendor AV Soft Technologies has been hacked and is being used to install malicious software on visitors' computers, according to security researchers last week. The download section of AV Soft's S-Cop website hosts a malicious code, according to Roger Thompson, chief research officer with security vendor AVG. They let one of their pages get hit by an iframe injection, he said. It shows that anyone can be a victim. It's hard to protect web servers properly. And we see that a lot. We see that, you know, machines got hit with something, got taken over by something. There are so many holes in websites that even when you protect them as best you can, there's always another exploit available tomorrow, you know? And so it's very hard to keep them clean. Iframe pages are commonly used by web developers to insert content into their web pages, but because it's possible to create an invisible iframe window, the technology is often misused by hackers as a way to silently redirect victims to malicious websites. AV Soft, which is based in New Delhi, sells an antivirus program called SmartCop and has sold a second antivirus product called SmartDog. You have a SmartCop, and he or she has a SmartDog. The company, which is not well known in the U.S., also specializes in recovering data lost due to virus attacks. That data recovery service could come in handy as the virus that they got hit with, which is called Virat, is known as a parasitic infector virus that is extremely difficult to remove. It infects all of your programs on your local hard drives, and then it starts hitting your network as well the first time you run it. Fortunately, the malware used to install Virat exploits only well-known bugs, meaning that users who are running antivirus software on fully patched systems will probably not be infected by the attack. So be very careful where you get your antivirus stuff from and make sure that you are always fully patched and running the latest versions
of
your antivirus.
Especially ironic that this was an antivirus company that wasn't patched.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Well, but it was an internal web exploit. And of course, they're not web.
Right.
They're not a web company. So that's certainly an understandable part of it. Our next caller is Mike from Ontario. Welcome, Mike. Is that Ontario, New York, or Ontario, Canada?
Well, that's Ontario, New York.
Okay.
There's also an Ontario, California I've been hearing about, too.
probably you're not from California, then.
No.
Because if you were, we'd all be coming to visit today. I'm telling you that right now. Although we can now see the parking lot, which is nice. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay. I recently purchased a Dell Inspiration with a Vista operating system and put away my old computer, which was a Dell Dimension PS desktop, and I went to go to use it again, the old one, to get some files I needed, and I get a black screen after beginning startup.
Yeah.
It doesn't go to my desktop. It remains black.
Does the monitor light turn green? Or does it stay orange?
I didn't notice it.
Yeah, do you even hear the hard drive or the system doing the post beeping?
Oh, yeah. I hear the hard drive cranking, even in the, during the black screen. It's cranking. Then
and the video is connected?
Yeah.
Video card is connected.
When it first turns on, do you see the little Dell and counting up the memory and all? You see all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
The only thing I didn't do is use the new monitor.
Use the original monitor.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
Well, it may be the monitor has failed if it's an older monitor. It may be that it's driving it at a too high a resolution.
Yeah, but you...
Because if he sees the early logos when it's in 640 by 480...
Right. Yeah, he should see the original Windows logo. Do you see that?
Yeah.
And then it switches out to just
a black
screen.
May have happened is either your resolution was set wrong just before you turned it off, or the video card...
Or the monitor.
Or one thing, something. If you're just trying to get a few files, you're getting it. When it's booting up, keep hitting the F8 key. You'll get into safe mode and select safe mode.
Don't hold it down. You got to keep tapping it.
Before the Windows logo comes up.
Keep tapping. Go in safe mode, at least safe mode. That will, no matter what monitor you have, get you up and so you can see stuff on the screen.
It keeps it at 640 by 480.
And then you can copy files off of that hard drive onto a flash drive or whatever.
You can even try changing the video resolution while you're in safe mode to set it at 640 by 480, or even 800 by 600. So when it reboots in full mode, it should work on the other monitor. I've seen some monitors where somehow they get set to like 100 hertz. You know, 1024 by 768 at 100 hertz, and the monitor can't do that. It needs 60 hertz.
Yep.
Right.
So it may not be the resolution. It may be the frequency.
Well, that's tricky because I get visual stuff in the beginning.
Because it's
in 640 by 480.
Oh,
what happens is your system always boots up in the lowest common denominator, which is 640 by 480, until you get to the point in the load where it says, all right, now what resolution did this guy really want?
It reads it in the Windows file.
And then it switches to that. And if it dies at that point, which is where it sounds like it's dying, then the problem is either the video card is no longer capable of running that resolution, or the monitor is no longer capable of running that resolution. And certainly if you've kept something in storage for a while and it got cold and got warm and got cold and got warm and got cold and got warm, it's very possible that something got damaged. And of course, you know, the higher resolution stuff is generally more delicate than
the
original.
What about the PRAM battery?
That wouldn't stop that.
It would have stopped a lot sooner.
So yeah, it's certainly a possibility that the delicate circuitry of the higher resolution video as opposed to the old 640 by 480 chip got damaged.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'll give it a try.
There you
go.
Give
it a shot.
Thanks again for your help.
Yep. Our pleasure.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You know, it sounds like magic, but those are the kind of things that can happen.
I hear that quite frequently. The computer was working fine last night. I turned it on this morning, and it was broken. What happened? It's another day.
Yeah, it broke.
Everything works fine until it doesn't.
Yep.
And what did I do wrong? Probably nothing.
Just turned it on. I mean, it's like a light bulb. You know, you turn it on, and one day it all of a sudden bops. Doesn't give you any forewarning. It just does it. Yep. Electronic.
Well, then they say, well, last night it was acting up on me, so I shut it down. Okay.
Hey.
Then that was the forewarning.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, there you go.
Hope you got backups. Thanks for calling.
What's
bye-bye.
What's that comedian? There's your sign.
There's your sign,
There's your sign, exactly. All right, our next caller is down the thruway in Syracuse, New York. Welcome, Kevin. What's your question?
Hi, I'm looking at buying a laptop for Linux.
Yes.
And I'm debating whether I should do dual boot with XP or run one in a virtual inside the other. Any opinions?
Well, that depends on what you want to do with it in the long run. If you're going to be running Windows-type programs, then dual booting is better. But if you're buying it to play and learn Linux, then just Linux is fine.
Right. In general, what I have found is most programs, if you run, for example, if you buy Ubuntu, you can get the VMware player. You still have to buy a version of Windows to install in VMware. None of that is free. You need a lot of RAM to do that. My recommendation is 2 gig at a minimum.
I was thinking 4.
That's much, much, much better. Either one would work. So the question really becomes, are you going to want to run both Linux and Windows programs simultaneously? Or would you really be seriously switching from one to the other? dual boot means you have to reboot to get to the other. Virtually means one that you can run, for example, XP inside Linux.
Right. The ideal would be to have them both up at once.
Then it's virtual. Right. That's
yeah,
your
that's,
choice.
That's right. More convenient, but you need more hardware for that and sometimes more software.
Make sure you get 4 gig of RAM. That's perfect. Make sure that your video card is one of the ones that's best supported by Linux. And right now that's NVIDIA or ATI. And the higher end the card, the better.
And some of the big companies, Dell and HP, sell computers pre-configured with Linux if you want to do
that. You still want to check the video information.
I was looking at Emperor Linux.
Emperor is a great company. They sell Linux-compatible machines. Again, make sure that you check video specs. Call them and ask them, you know, this is what I want to do. What's best for me?
How about something like plug and play and stuff like that? Does that work through the VM?
Everything I have tried works. I won't say everything works, but everything I've tried works.
One thing that becomes tricky is, say you have a USB printer. It can only be active in one OS at a time.
Right.
So it's either in your guest OS or your host OS. You can't use it in both. And one of the workers, we do a lot of this now with Mac and Windows running on the same machine. One of the workarounds is you connect it USB on the Mac, which is the host OS,
right,
and then share it to the network. And then in Windows, talk to it as a network printer.
Right.
And then you can use them both in the same side.
Right. So those are things you'll learn. But it should work. And virtual, I think, is the way to go. I'd be doing it here if I had more RAM in this machine because... You know, we often get asked Windows questions that I have to disturb Dave and go over there and play with. We have to open it on his machine. But yeah, I would say that virtual is the way to go.
Would you say Windows under Linux or Linux under Windows?
No, Windows under Linux.
Okay.
Linux is much lighter in terms of the virtual machine, so Windows will run faster under Linux than Linux will run under Windows.
Right. Okay.
Okie doke?
Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, I found a couple of websites. There's linuxcertified.com and linuxforlaptops.com that talk specifically about putting Linux on laptops, and some of them even offer laptops preloaded with Linux on it.
Right, and he's going to Emperor Linux, which is a company that sells laptops with Linux on them. So you're going to put those links in the...
Yep.
Yeah, excellent. All right. Our next caller, we got time? Oh, plenty of time. Our next caller is Liz from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Liz. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you so much.
I teach at a small school, and we have a small computer lab, about 24 computers. And we have had a funny problem where we boot up the system, and all the lights go green, except for the monitor. Briefly goes green, and then it goes yellow, and never turns on. We've switched systems, and the monitors work fine. We've had text people from the computer place that support us, and they came in and looked, and every time they take it out, take it to their shop, it works. So they bring it back, and their latest decision was that it was our power cables. And sometimes you said it's rare, but sometimes they go, well, I did that, and of course, this one system it worked with, but all the others, when I do that, it doesn't make any difference.
Now, this is all the machines or one or two machines? Or
yeah, one or two machines, and then like another. I have two down now, and then yesterday I went to turn another one on and started doing it. It won't turn on the monitor. And I take the covers off and clean and wiggle around. And
you make sure everything's plugged in tight and the
right
monitor is tightly connected to the computer?
Correct.
Are these LCD monitors or TV sets, VRTs?
Oh, I'm sorry, they're CRTs.
CRTs.
And they work fine if I put them on a system that works, the monitors.
Are the, well, now, this is certainly a possibility. CRTs require actually a lot more power than an LCD does. So if you've got marginal amounts of power coming into that machine, here's how
especially
you test that.
Especially if you have a load, you know, 20 or 30 computers on one circuit.
Right. Here's how you test that. Turn them all off but one.
I'm sorry, do what?
Turn them all off, but one of the bad ones.
Oh, okay.
Right? If that works, then your problem is definitely power.
Okay.
If not, it is somewhere else, and we're going to have to do more
now
thinking.
I do know I've left one on, the system on, and the monitor was dead, and I've turned off all the computers. And would I have to reboot the system to get the monitor to go on, or should it just come on?
I would turn everything off and start from scratch.
Okay.
So turn everything off, and then turn on one of the machines you're having trouble with.
Okay.
And see if that works. Now, on the other hand, if there is some kind of problem with your power, it may have blown the power supply on that machine.
Oh.
But it still, on that monitor, but still give it a try, see what happens.
Power supplies like crazy.
Yeah.
And they would have known, though, because they did take it into the shop and said everything was fine.
Well, that's a lovely theory.
and they may, like in our shop, I might have 10 or 12 computers, but only one or two might be powered on at once, and so that circuit's only got one or two computers on it.
And it works.
Right. In a school lab or educational lab, you might have all of your computers plugged into a single circuit.
Right.
And not
right, and then basically
power.
Whichever one gets turned on last loses.
Well, we do, I think they only have two circuits for 24, and would it be power strips? Because we're like daisy chains?
That's definitely a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can be a problem.
That's also, by the way, according to the fire marshal, illegal, so don't mention what school you're from.
He's been there. He said it was okay. It's not daisy chained. We have, four going into, whatever.
The power strip plugged into
Daisy chained is illegal.
Never mind. Okay, and if that doesn't work, what would my next step be?
I don't have a next step yet, so let's not jump off that bridge till we come to it. Try that and let us know.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks. I'm sorry I don't have an instant answer for you, Liz.
Okay, well, that's all right.
Good luck at your anonymous school.
If that's Liz's problem, if that's what it turns out to be, she needs an electrician in there.
Yeah, fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we are going to take another break. Once again, the phone number is 222-1180. That's in the 585 area code. 800-295-1180 for you on our One Communications toll-free line. And, of course, *1180 if you are a Verizon wireless customer. I don't know if that's Verizon just in the United States or if it's Verizon anywhere in the world. I don't know how that works. It'd be cool if somebody called in and said, I'm in Arizona. I'm calling in *1180. It is a free call if you're a Verizon wireless customer. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Headband Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco. It is 38 minutes after the hour, and apparently we're having way too much fun in here. The anti-fun police will be in shortly. Back in just a couple of minutes on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And as you all know, that is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, it looks like Intel has been hit with a patent suit. They were hit with a lawsuit by the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, or WARF, on Wednesday, alleging that the chipmaker used a WARF invention in its processor architectures, including the popular Core 2 Duo. The patent infringement lawsuit, which was filed in U.S. District Court for the Western District of Wisconsin, alleges that Intel implemented in many of its chips a University of Wisconsin-Madison invention of a circuit that executes instructions to speed up processor performance. The patent was awarded to four university researchers in 1998. WARF is looking for an undisclosed amount of compensation and an order for the company to stop selling certain processors, including the Core 2 Duo. A court date for legal proceedings has not yet been set. So it'll be interesting. Now, I'm sure that they're not really going to shut down the Core 2 Duo thing. That's just taking a stance for the legal implications and, prepping themselves for negotiating, right? But it's interesting that this can happen. Apparently, Intel and WARF have been in discussion for more than a year. Apparently, they could not come to an amiable conclusion, so WARF has sued them. I suspect that will hasten the amiable conclusion.
The whole patent mess needs to get worked on somehow. People are getting patents on such a vague thing. And then patent companies
Apple just got one for lighting something up by touching it. They applied for that. Mm-hmm. Half the patents that are out there are just stupid.
Yeah.
What we really need is somebody to stand behind the patent, the people who decide on patents.
Mm-hmm.
Every time they say yes for a stupid one, you get a slap on the back of the head. Dope slap. Boom. I meant no. Thanks. Bye. Next.
Well, the issue now is that if no one else has patented an idea, not an idea, the implementation of an idea, you can.
Right.
But some of the stuff is just so obvious,
like one click.
Yeah, one click purchasing.
Purchasing. At some point, it comes down to one click. Okay.
Check out. Yeah.
anyway, that's just, we hate the patent system.
Yeah, it seems the standards for getting patents have changed in recent times, and it has to do with policy that needs to be changed.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that the patent people originally began patenting things like rocks.
and dinosaurs, and now they're still there, and they're dealing with a digital world they do not understand.
Well, wasn't one of the, you know, the original quotes from the first director of the patent office, "This is a stupid idea. Everything that has been everything that could be invented has been invented. We don't need this."
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, he might have been right.
Since we're now patenting stupid things.
Yeah.
Speaking of dual core processors, we have Mark from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Yes, I have a question about dual core processors.
Yes, you do.
Do you need new programs to take advantage of it, or can you use programs that you have been using, like old Photoshop programs?
Yes and no.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, Photoshop, as a specific example, already is aware of dual processor. But yes, you need programs that can take advantage of it. But in many cases, if the operating system is well designed enough, if you run two programs, they each get their own processor. So the program doesn't need to know that there's two processors there. The operating system hands out processor time as it needs.
Right.
So it's,
well, what I'm doing right now is a lot of work with taking still pictures and putting them into like a video, and then my computer takes a long time to crunch it to make it into a video.
The video encoding would be faster with a dual processor if that video encoding program understands dual processors.
Right. Dual processors work in one of two ways. If the operating system only is dual processor aware, it hands different programs to different processors so you can run multiple things simultaneously. In order to actually make a program faster under dual core, any individual program, it itself must be dual core aware and hand parts of itself to different processors.
And a lot of times that's called multi-threading. Now, on my computer now, I have a single processor computer. I have 54 processes running 238 threads at the moment. And that's just a couple, three programs running at once.
Right.
So the operating system is managing how much each task gets of the processor.
Right. And when you're doing video, it also matters how much RAM you have, how much free disk space you have, how unfragmented that disk space is. The one time you really need to worry about fragmenting is when you're doing video.
And the L2 and L3 cache on the processor become a bigger issue. A lot of times you'll see, especially in the cheaper PCs, it'll have very little L2 cache and sometimes no L3 cache. And that makes the chip cheaper. But if you're doing video processing, you want huge amounts of level 2 cache.
Right. So there's way more to it than just the dual core.
So I should check with my program or my company that's supplying it to me to see if it's worth doing.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
But then on the other side of the coin, they haven't been able to make chips that much faster anyway. So the way they've done it is by putting two cores on a single chip and claiming it's faster.
Yes.
Which for some instances it is, and if, you know, the specifically written programs, Apple's running into an issue now that their high-end pro workstations are all 8-core machines, and there's only one or two programs that can take advantage of 8 cores.
Right.
And one of them is Cinema 4D for rendering video.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, if you're on the line, stay on the line. We will get to you right after the break. But right now we do have to take a break. The little financial dramas that allow us to stay on the air must have their moment in the sun, and so we will go through a few of those, and each and every one of you needs to listen very, very carefully to them, and we will come back on the other side of this little financial drama break with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Chris Reich, with Jessica Headband Sawyer, and me, Nick Francesco, and it is 49 minutes after the hour. I've finally gotten rid of Walker in my head. It's not Jessica Walker, but now I'm having trouble with Headband. I don't know what I thought I was about to say. Thank God I didn't say whatever it was. We'll be back on the other side of all of that. With more of the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. If you're on the line, stay on the line. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Immediately back to the phones, we have Jerry on the line from Rochester. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Hi. I tried to watch a TV show on the internet because I fell asleep on it the other night. So I went to the website. You know, you get the little palm. I clicked it. And nothing happened. I waited and waited. I kept clicking and clicking and clicking. Nothing would work. I went to a different website, and they told me I had to download something from Graboid. I've never heard of Graboid before. So it downloaded for about 35 minutes because I have dial-up. And then it said I couldn't do it. There was an error.
That's probably why the first video didn't work to begin with, because you're on dial-up. Yeah. Uh-huh. It may take 20, 30, 40 minutes to buffer the video, to download enough of the video before you can start watching it.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, television over the internet really does require broadband.
Uh-huh. It didn't even give me, it didn't act like it was doing anything, you know, the little hourglass.
Well, here's the other problem.
And Graboid is a video player.
Yeah, Graboid is a video player. But part of the problem is that everybody's writing programs as if everybody had broadband now.
Oh.
So they wouldn't need to show you any sort of information while it's getting ready to download, because on a broadband, it would take us a couple of seconds.
Okay, so what do I do?
Get broadband or don't watch on the computer.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's no magic here.
Oh, that's terrible.
I know.
I have a media player and all that stuff on here.
One of the things you could try,
uh-huh.
And I mean, this is just try, is a program called Miro, M-I-R-O.
Okay.
That will download all kinds of things for you in the background. So you'd probably have to leave your...
It may take hours and hours.
Yeah, it'll take hours and hours. You have to leave your machine on like overnight and tie up your phone line.
And get one show down.
To download a single show. But...
Yeah.
There are no TV channels on there?
I'm actually downloading it when it says view this particular thing I wanted to view from last week's show.
Right.
It was actually going to download it. I couldn't just click it and watch it from the internet.
Well, it has to download to your computer so you can watch it. The other half is download and save. Which is usually called downloading.
Right.
That you're doing something called streaming, which is download and play, but
two
don't
different
save.
Things.
But it still has to download to your computer.
And it has to download through your modem, which is really, for video, horribly, horribly slow.
Mm-hmm.
And you had mentioned that you have the Windows Media Player. There are many different types of media on the internet. Windows Media Player is only one of them. The Graboid video you mentioned, Flash video, QuickTime video, Reel video. And every different video site you go to can use a different video player.
Right. And then, my wife does this all the time, but of course I'm on DSL, so I get a good fast download and to watch the shows all the time.
Stopped. It wouldn't even complete its thing.
Right, because when you have dial-up, there are a million things that can interrupt the download, particularly since it takes so long. And unfortunately, when you're downloading large programs like Graboid or video streams, any one of a billion things can cause it to not work right.
So I need Miro.
Well, Miro, as Chris just said, will not do the new television
shows. Television shows. It's called IPTV. It's internet television. Thousands of other people have made their own TV shows and are publishing them on the internet.
And you can download a bunch of stuff like all the Betty Boop shows.
Some
and
of
a
the
bunch
really
old comedies
stuff that are out of copyright. But the new TV shows on the networks, you have to download from the networks.
And you simply cannot do it on dial-up.
All right.
Sorry.
Okay, thanks.
I know we've disappointed Jerry now. I feel bad. I'm sorry.
There is a way.
Well, there is a way that you could use multiple phone lines and multiple modems bond it all together.
Golly, Ned,
you're not
going to
want to do that.
Complete geek. Yeah, the reality
is... We used to do that before there was broadband.
Yes. But the reality is that the price of poker keeps going up. And if you want to keep up with the stuff that's going on nowadays, you need broadband, you need a fast machine, you need a higher-end graphics card, you need good sound. There are things you have to have in order to do those things. You cannot expect a computer built in 1979 running a communication system built in 1910 to download the stuff that's new today.
Yep.
It's just simply not going to work.
It's frustrating.
It's like complaining. It's like complaining that your Edsel won't do 150 miles an hour and isn't electric.
Yep.
Well, that's right. It isn't. Get over it.
Yep. And even on broadband, we're used to, on a modem, it took an hour to download something. Now on broadband, it still takes an hour to download that 2-gig movie.
That's exactly. It's always an hour. That's exactly right. Luckily, we grew up used to that.
Yeah.
Instead of an hour to download one document, it's now an hour and I get a whole movie. Excellent. All right, we are done for another week. I really want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. There are quite a number of you this week. You got to call in earlier and more often. It's the Chicago style of calling in. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who once again gave us his time and expertise and talent, and the mighty, mighty Jessica Headband Sawyer, who took all the nonsense we threw at her and slung it right back at us without a blink.
I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. Thanks so much for watching and listening to whatever you're doing to Soundbites.